Hey guys, this is Vyom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today, we will be talking about a stock that was suggested by a subscriber. That stock is Apple. Apple is one of the largest makers of PCs, peripheral, and consumer products such as iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, and so forth. Today, we will be reviewing the company's 10K to get a better idea of its business and reportable segments. We'll be looking at the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Then we'll look at the company's DCF, discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company. And finally, do an expected rate of return calculation to see if you were to invest in Apple at the current stock price, what kind of return can we expect on this investment? So let's dive in and review Apple. Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10K, which is the annual report that Apple filed with the SEC. This is for the fiscal year that ended September 26, 2020. And on page 4 of the report, Apple provides a company background. Apple states that it designs, manufactures, and markets smartphones, personal computers, tablets, wearables, and accessories, and sells a variety of related services. Next, it talks about its products, such as iPhone, Mac, iPad, wearables, home, and accessories. After that, Apple talks about its services, such as advertising, Apple Care, cloud services, digital content, and payment services. On page 58 of this report, Apple talks about its operating segments. Apple says that it reports segment information based on management approach, and that the company's reportable segments consist of Americas, Europe, Greater China, Japan, and the rest of Asia Pacific. Next, Apple provides this table where it breaks down the income brought in across its reportable segments. We can see that the Americas segment brought in the majority of the company's overall sales. When we look at the past 3-year trend, we can see that the net sales and operating income for Americas, Europe, and rest of Asia Pacific has been steadily increasing. Greater China, on the other hand, has been seeing a decline in its net sales and operating income. Japan, on the other hand, has stayed fairly stable. On the next page, Apple shows its total operating income for the past 3 years. When we look at the past 3-year trend, we can see that Apple's segment operating incomes did see a decline in the year 2019. However, for the year 2020, the segment operating income surpassed the levels of those seen in 2019 as well as 2018. The proportion of money allocated for the research and development expenses have been increasing every year. Back in the year 2018, about 16% of the company's segment operating income was spent in research and development. And for the year 2020, about 20.5% of the year's segment operating income was spent in research and development. And we definitely want to be invested in companies that spends money for its research and development. That way it can make new products, innovate, and constantly stay ahead of the curve. Apple says that the US and China were the only countries that accounted for more than 10% of the company's net sales in the year 2020, 2019, and 2018. It breaks down its net sales for the year 2018, 2019, and 2020. And we can see that US and China makes up more than half of the company's total net sales. Finally, looking at the company's long-lived assets. For the year 2020, Apple had about 70% of its assets in the United States. About 20% of its assets were in China, and 10% were in other countries. Now that we have a brief idea of Apple's products, its reportable segments, and its revenue breakdown, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's look at the key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at Apple. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that Apple made in sales. Back in 2011, Apple's revenue was about $108 billion. And for the year 2020, it was about $275 billion. Over the past 10 years, Apple's revenue has been trending upwards. Next, looking at the operating income. The operating income is what we get when we subtract cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2011, the company's operating income was about $34 billion. And for the year 2020, it was about $66 billion. Similar to the revenue, the company's operating income has been trending upwards. Next, looking at the operating margin. The operating margin is the ratio of the company's operating income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's operating margin was about 31%, and for the year 2020, it was about 24%. Ideally, we want to see the company's operating margin to be staying steady or increasing, and we can see that over the past few years, the company's operating margin has stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the net income. The net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it has paid for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, Apple's net income was about $26 billion, and for the year 2020, it was about $57 billion. Over the past 10 years, Apple's net income has been trending upwards. Next, looking at the dividends per share. Back in 2012, Apple paid out about 9 cents per share as dividend. And for the year 2020, it paid out about 80 cents per share as dividend. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that Apple has been hiking its dividend every year for the past 10 years. Next, looking at the payout ratio. The payout ratio is a comparison of the company's dividend to its income. So it gives us an idea of what percent of the company's income is actually being paid out to the shareholders in the form of dividends. Back in 2013, about 27.4% of the company's income was being paid out as dividend. And for the year 2020, about 24% of the company's income was being paid out as dividends. Ideally, we want to see the company's payout ratio to be staying steady, and that is certainly what we're seeing with Apple. We can see that even though Apple is hiking its dividend, its earnings per share have been increasing every year as well, so it is generating enough income to compensate for the increased dividends, and that is why we're seeing that the company's payout ratio over the years have stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, Apple had about 26,226 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, it has 17,180 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, the company's shares outstanding number has been decreasing, which tells us that Apple has been buying back its shares, which is good news for existing shareholders, as the process of buybacks actually helps increase the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Next, looking at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. Back in 2011, Apple's book value was about $2.94 per share, and for the trailing 12 months, it's at $4.15 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value has always been positive, which tells us that Apple always had more assets than its liabilities on its balance sheet. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2011, Apple's free cash flow was about $30 billion, and for the year 2020, it's about $73 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's free cash flow has been increasing. I will be using the past 10 years of free cash flow for my expected rate of return calculation, and I will be using the 2020 figure of $73,365 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's net margin was about 23.95%, and for the year 2020, it was about 20.91%. Over the past 10 years, the company's net margin has stayed fairly consistent. Next is the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2011, Apple's return on equity was about 42%. And for the year 2020, it was about 73%. Whenever the company's return on equity is excessively high, that is a cause of concern because it tells us that the company is becoming more leveraged. And the way this return on equity number gets inflated is we know that assets have to equal liabilities plus shareholders' equity. And whenever my liabilities go up, my shareholders' equity has to go down. And when we look at the equation for the return on equity, we know that it's equal to net income divided by shareholders' equity. And whenever my shareholders' equity is a little tiny number, I'm bound to get inflated return on equity numbers. Next, looking at the return on invested capital. This number gives an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2011, Apple's return on invested capital was about 41%. For the year 2020, it was about 30%. And for the trailing 12 months, it's about 40%. Apple's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 9%. And given that the company's return on invested capital is much greater than the company's weighted average cost of capital, tells us that the company's management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the company's interest coverage. The interest coverage is the ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Benjamin Graham preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or greater. For the year 2020, the company's interest coverage was about 24.35 times, and for the trailing 12 months, it's about 34.96 times. Now let's look at the company's financial health, focusing on the company's liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the company's current ratio, which compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was 1.61, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.14. Next, looking at the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's quick ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that means that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was 1.35. For the year 2020, it was 1.22. And for the latest quarter, it's at 0.96. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to its shareholders' equity. So a high financial leverage ratio tells us that more of the company's assets are financed through liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was at 1.52, and for the latest quarter, it's at 4.87. Over the past 10 years, the company's financial leverage has slowly been increasing. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than 1.0. Back in 2013, the company's debt-to-equity was at 0.14, and for the latest quarter, it's at 1.57. When we look at the financial leverage and debt-to-equity ratio, we can see that Apple is a lot more leveraged now than where it was 10 years ago. When we compare Apple's financial health and liquidity ratios to its competitor Microsoft, we can see that for the latest quarter, Microsoft has better financial health and liquidity ratios than Apple. Now let's look at the company's efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives us an idea of how many days go by from the day Apple recognizes its sales to the day it actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2011, Apple's day sales outstanding was about 18 days, and for the year 2020, it was about 26 days. Ideally, we want the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady, and we can see that Apple's day sales outstanding number has stayed fairly steady from the year 2013 through 2020. Next is the day's inventory. This number gives an idea of how many days does Apple's product sit in its inventory before it's sold. Back in 2011, Apple's days inventory was about 5.17 days, and for the year 2020, it's about 8.79 days. Next is the payables period. This number gives an idea of how many days does Apple take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2011, Apple took about 75 days to pay its suppliers, and for the year 2020, it took about 95 days to pay its suppliers. Ideally, we want the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. An increasing payables period tells us that the company may be holding on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers. However, we can see that Apple's payables period over the past few years has stayed fairly consistent. In fact, we saw a decrease in its payables period for the trailing 12 months. Finally, looking at the cash conversion cycle. The cash conversion cycle is the addition of the day sales outstanding to the day's inventory, and then we subtract the payables period from that number. A negative cash conversion cycle tells us that the company receives cash before it actually has to pay cash out to its suppliers. Ideally, we want the company's cash conversion cycle to be negative, as that means that the company has a lot many days to play around with its cash before its obligations are due. And to make this concept a little bit simpler, for example, if my customers paid me cash in 30 days, but I did not have to make any payments to my suppliers until 90 days, then what that would mean is I would have a 60-day window where I can play around with that money, which means I would have a negative 60-day cash conversion cycle. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover. The inventory turnover gives an idea of how many times does Apple go through its inventory in a calendar year. Back in 2011, it went through its inventory about 70 times, and for the year 2020, it went through its inventory about 41.52 times. Ideally, we want to see the company's inventory turnover to be staying steady or increasing. And we can see that over the past few years, since 2017, the company's inventory turnover has stayed fairly stable. Now let's compare the company's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Apple's PE is about 28.7, whereas S&P 500 is at 27.6. Apple's price-to-book is at 30.9, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.3. Apple's price to sales is at 6.8, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.1. Apple's price to cash flow is at 22.1, whereas S&P 500 is at 17.4. And finally, dividend yield. Apple has a dividend yield of 0.6%, and S&P 500 is at 1.5%. We can see that on all these valuation metrics, Apple is overvalued when compared to the S&P 500. Hey guys, now let's look at the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis for Apple. Over here, I based the 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which is at $73,365 million. I'm using an annual growth rate of free cash flow to be 9%. What this means is I expect Apple's free cash flow to grow at 9% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I want this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 5%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect Apple's free cash flow to grow at 5%. Apple has 17,180 million shares outstanding,
and has a long-term debt of $98,667 million. I got this number from Apple's balance sheet. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get Apple's intrinsic value to be about $116 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the current stock price of about $130 per share, we can see that the current stock is trading about 12% above the company's intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $697 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be from the 10-year mark into perpetuity. We sum all those up to get the intrinsic value to be about $2 trillion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $116 per share. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if we think that Apple is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $35 per share. And if we disregard both the debt and the perpetuity, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt and perpetuity to be about $40 per share. Finally, if we drop the company's discount rate to its weighted average cost of capital, which is also known as its hurdle rate, which in Apple's case is 9%, then we get the intrinsic value to be about $149 per share. And when we compare that intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, we can see that the current stock is trading about 13% below the company's intrinsic value. Hey guys, now let's look at the expected rate of return calculation for Apple. Over here, I pasted the past 10 years of free cash flows that I got from Morningstar. All the numbers here are in millions of US dollars. This is the early free cash flow trend that we get over the past 10 years. We can see that Apple's free cash flow has been trending upwards. Next, looking at the future data and predictions, I'm assuming that there's a 35% likelihood that Apple's free cash flow will grow at 10%. There's a 50% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 8%. And a 15% likelihood that its free cash flow will grow at 5%. These are the potential free cash flow rates that we get into the future. After taking into account the numbers of shares outstanding, which is 17,180 million shares, at the current stock price of about $130 per share, we can expect to get a return of about 4.2% on this investment. What this means is if you were to purchase a share of Apple at the current stock price of about $130 per share and hold the security through 2060, then we can expect to get an annual return of about 4.2% on this investment. Hey guys, now let's wrap it all up. We reviewed Apple's 10K annual report to get a better idea of its products, its reportable segments, as well as its revenue breakdown. We saw that the company's revenue, operating income, as well as net income over the past 10 years has been increasing. The company has been hiking its dividend every year for the past 10 years and has been buying back its shares. Both of these things definitely point that the company is very shareholder friendly. The company's return on equity has been greater than 8% every year for the past 10 years. Recently, the company's return on equity has been very high, which tells us that the company has been racking on more liabilities. In other words, Apple is getting more leveraged. When we looked at the company's return on invested capital, we saw that the return on invested capital was greater than its weighted average cost of capital, which tells us that the company is creating value for its shareholders. Additionally, Apple's interest coverage is greater than 5x. When we looked at Apple's financial leverage and debt to equity ratio, we could see that the company is becoming more leveraged. In other words, it is taking on more debt. Apple was a lot less leveraged 10 years ago than where it is right now. After that, we looked at the company's efficiency ratios and saw that Apple's efficiency has been fairly consistent over the past few years. Apple has a negative cash conversion cycle, which tells us that the company brings in cash a lot sooner than when it departs from its cash. Next, we compared Apple's current valuation to that of the S&P 500 and found that on all the valuation metrics, Apple was overvalued to the S&P 500. When we performed the discounted free cash flow DCF analysis, we found that when we used a 10% discount rate, the intrinsic value came out to about $116 per share. And when we used a 9% discount rate, the intrinsic value came out to about $149 per share. And when we compared that $149 per share to the current stock price of about $130 per share, we could see that the current stock is trading about 13% below the company's intrinsic value. After that, we looked at the company's expected rate of return calculation and found out that if we were to invest in Apple at the current stock price of about $130 per share, we can expect to get an annual return of about 4.2% on this investment. Overall, we can see that even though Apple is taking on more liabilities and becoming more leveraged, fundamentally, it is a very strong company. Its free cash flows have been positive and increasing over the past few years. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway took a stake in Apple a few years ago, and Apple, even today, is Buffett's biggest holding in his portfolio. In conclusion, Apple appears to be a good long-term investment. The stock price did increase significantly over the past year. However, as value investors and Buffett followers, we know that the longer we hold on to the security, the lower the investment risk. In other words, as our investment time horizon increases, our risk associated with that investment decreases. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Apple interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions as to which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I will greatly appreciate it. Thank you.